It wasn't a stretch of the imagination at all that late in my 40s, I would become the placement supervisor of a small adoption agency. Adopted at 6 months into a loving home, I learned up close and personal the joys and the sorrows of adoption. I was taught that adoption was a love story. Adored by parents, family, and faith community, I had every reason to thrive, and so I did in so many ways. And yet there was this pain in my heart, which I did not understand, nor did my parents. I like to say I acted out this pain the first third of my life, worked it out in the second third of my life, and taught about it in the last third. My soul had a fascination with this pain and would recycle it regularly as a divine grace for healing. Each time I opened my heart to healing, I reclaimed a part of myself. I had things to teach adoptive parents about parenting their children. I had been inspired by a Catholic monk to do adoption work while on retreat. He suggested I learn metta, the Buddhist practice of loving kindness, and teach it to all adoptive parents. I call these teaching adoption virtues with a wink because we were a non-sectarian agency. The fundamental teaching is this. Within you is a place of goodness. This place is untouched by the circumstances of your life. This is your true home, your true identity. Parent from this place. Learn to see good in all people, especially yourself, your partner, your birth parent, and your child. Help your child find this place within himself. Adoptive parents needed to learn about the primal wound of adoption. Losing a connection to one's biological roots is a painful dilemma for an adopted child. Belonging can become a vulnerable affair of the heart. An adopted child must answer difficult questions for himself. Why was I relinquished? Is there something wrong with me? Which morphs in later years to, do I matter? Am I lovable? Where do I belong? This pain within a child must be attended to by mindful parents who know how to be a compassionate witness while creating a safe container of trust in which a child can share. This pain is part of the love story. We need to talk about it. There are many things an adoptive parent can do to help their child move in the direction of self-understanding, self-knowledge, and a greater sense of belonging. Fostering open adoption can help a child reconnect with his birth family and learn his biological story. But most importantly, adoptive parents can become a champion, a spiritual guide. They can build a foundation of faith based on what I call love story values, which in the end helps a child return to his true self. This is the greatest and ultimate belonging, to belong to oneself, to know one's goodness, wholeness, and holiness. We can learn this ourselves. This is a faith worth nurturing. I light this chalice today with gratitude for our beloved faith community, where our connection is grounded in our worth and our value, and our belonging is sustained by a covenant of love.
The House of Belonging by David White. I awoke this morning in the gold light, turning this way and that, thinking for a moment it was one day like any other. But the veil had gone from my darkened heart, and I thought, it must have been the quiet candlelight that filled my room. It must have been the first easy rhythm with which I breathed myself to sleep. It must have been the prayer, I said, speaking to the otherness of the night. And I thought, this is the good day you could meet your love. This is the black day someone close to you could die. This is the day you realize how easily the thread is broken between this world and the next. And I found myself sitting up in the quiet pathway of light, the tawny, close-grained cedar burning round me like fire, and all the angels of this housely heaven ascending through the first roof of light the sun has made. This is the bright home in which I live. This is where I ask my friends to come. This is where I want to love all the things it has taken me so long to learn to love. This is the temple of my adult aloneness, and I belong to that aloneness as I belong to my life. There is no house like the house of belonging.
My daughter Samantha is completing her first year at the University of Colorado in Boulder. It's been a successful year for her, and she has transitioned beautifully into the independent lifestyle of a college freshman. About a month ago, we were driving her back to her dorm following her spring break. We pulled up to the sidewalk outside Libby Hall, got her suitcases out of the back of the car, and in turn, Eleanor and I hugged her. I told her, I love you. And then in a moment, we were back in the car, pulling away as she ascended the concrete stairs that led to her home. I happened to notice, as we vacated the space, another vehicle, not dissimilar to ours, pulled into the exact same spot, and an almost identical ritual transpired. Another freshman returning from break, more hugs, and I presume more I love yous spoken. It was then that it occurred to me. That nondescript junction of sidewalk and street has borne witness to countless embraces and declarations of love. It may, in fact, be the biggest I love you spot on that campus. Or in Boulder, or beyond. I mean, think about it. How many other specific geographic locations can you name where those words are spoken more often? The Overlook at Niagara Falls, the observation deck of the Eiffel Tower, the Viva Las Vegas Wedding Chapel. There is such a place. They boast the largest freestanding chapel on the Vegas Strip. But these I love yous, spoken hurriedly in a sometimes awkward embrace between a parent and their young person, are different, aren't they? The subtext is rich and complex. The face value of the sentiment is certainly true, but what else is being said? I support you. I'm proud of you. My heart is breaking because I'm losing you. My dreams are being fulfilled in you. All these and countless others, year after year, on that exact same spot. That ground, that obtuse intersection of curb and gutter, has been sanctified by the repeated ritual of departure. It is holy ground, as sacred as the River Ganges or Solomon's Temple. It is the junction of holding on and letting go. For the student They turn and face their future, their freedom. For the parent, they watch with bittersweet pride as that little piece of themselves, or I guess not so little anymore, walks away. Samantha is my only natural child. As many of you know, I was adopted at birth, and I grew up an only child. My connection to her is strong, because for nearly my whole life, I've been alone in the world, genetically speaking, save for her. Growing up as an only child with parents who did not share my DNA, I often felt alone, isolated. And although I had loving parents, cousins, uncles, and aunts, I knew in my core that I was not of them. My intimacy to them would always be flavored with this knowledge. Likewise, I also had no cultural heritage to anchor me. It should come as no surprise that among my favorite movies are The Godfather, Fiddler on the Roof, and The Commitments. Each of these films has as a central theme the importance of understanding your roots, of understanding your identity through the lens of family and ethnic traditions. The word heritage has come down to us from Latin and Old French, and for 500 years has meant condition or state transmitted from ancestors. What it means to me is to belong. It means understanding how to navigate this world because your ancestors have gone before you. The American mythologist and comparative religion scholar Joseph Campbell describes human storytelling in the form of the monomyth, or the universal truth, as the hero's journey. Every rite of passage that we enact is a retelling of this hero's journey. Now, often the initiate is reluctant to the call of the journey, but ultimately is compelled to go. And along this journey of transformation, the hero is exposed to trials and tribulations, but also finds wise elders and mentors, those who have traveled the labyrinth before. They know the way. And more importantly, they know that what seems impossible to the initiate is, in fact, infinitely possible. This is the power of myth, the strength of heritage. Without it, we are lost in the wilderness, uncertain how to maneuver through life. Now, growing up, my longing for heritage was not as sentient as all that. I only knew that I was alone, uncertain, not comfortable in my skin. I didn't belong. And that isolation stayed with me until my junior year in high school. And that's when I auditioned for and was cast in my first play. Suddenly, I was part of a community, a collective of like-minded peers. I had never known that sense of belonging before. It was like a drug, and I wanted more. That singular experience set my life course, propelled me on my own hero's journey. I had filled my ancestral longing with the connection I found in the theater community. And it was sustaining. Well, mostly. Of course, every production I worked on came to an end. There would inevitably be another show, more opportunity to build a family, but like with my adopted clan, the connection was not complete. I experienced thwarted belongingness. One theater connection I made would be different, however. Not surprisingly, I met the woman that would one day be my wife and the mother of my daughter. I was excited to start a family of my own. I mean, here was my chance to create that which had been denied me in my childhood. It was my wife, Eleanor, that introduced me to Unitarian Universalism. When she first described it to me, I couldn't comprehend what she was talking about. Growing up Catholic, and talk about a cultural identity, a non-creedal religion made absolutely no sense to me. My first steps into this church were tentative, to say the least. Eleanor had been hired as the director of religious education, and I kind of came along as part of the package. When Samantha was in preschool, Eleanor asked me to be one of her teachers. I reluctantly agreed. On the days when I wasn't teaching, I still brought her to church, and I began to sit in on the worship service. I admit I didn't care much for hymn singing, but the sermons of then-senior minister Mark Sulkin were thoughtful, often funny, and always heartfelt. Gradually, I was changing, taking a new juncture on my hero's journey, although I wasn't aware of it. I was making friends here, first through the annual Buckhorn family retreat, and then simply by just showing up. I was coming into relation with the members of this congregation. It's funny how things can change in an instant. If you're lucky, you'll recognize those moments when they come. Now, I'll share with you now two such moments from my life. The most recent came as the result of a direct-to-consumer DNA test Eleanor gave me for Christmas a couple of years ago. She knew of my longing for an ancestral identity. It was like a rash that goes dormant for a time, but eventually resurfaces. It had been manifest anew when we had seen the movie Philomena earlier that year. She was inspired to do something about it and began to research companies. As it turned out, she had several vendors from which to choose. She went with a company called 23andMe because they also boasted a good record of helping adoptees find their biological family. Now, she figured that was a long shot, but she knew at least I would at least discover my ancestral heritage. And she ordered the test, which I found under the Christmas tree. Several weeks later, I was notified that my results were ready. I logged into the website, and sure enough, posted there was a recipe for making me. No big surprises. I'm overwhelmingly Northern European, with a third of my genetic profile coming from English, Irish, Scottish origins, and another eighth from the Scandinavian countries. I also have 289 Neanderthal variants, putting me in the top third of 23andMe customers, yet still accounting for less than 4% of my genetic makeup. Cavemen notwithstanding, I finally knew who my people were. And then I really found out. You see, 23andMe will tell you who else in their database shares your DNA. And depending on the percentage, they can predict that person's relationship to you. My highest match was a woman named Tanya, with whom I share 13% DNA, meaning she was likely a first cousin. And like most community-based websites, there's an internal messaging system through which you can communicate with other members. I figured a first cousin, that's a pretty close match. What harm could there be in reaching out? Maybe she could help me. With a combination of excitement, trepidation, fear, and a whole host of other emotions, I sent the following message. Hello, Tanya. My name is Lenny Scovel, and I recently submitted a DNA sample to 23andMe. I was adopted at birth and know nothing of my birth family. All I know for sure is that I was born in Greenville, South Carolina in 1963 at St. Francis Catholic Hospital. 23andMe indicates that you and I are potentially first cousins. Does any of my information make any sense to you? It has been the mystery and the curiosity of my life to know where I came from. Any help you'd be able and willing to share would be appreciated beyond expression. Sincerely, Lenny Scovel. What happened next is nothing short of a miracle. Many adoptees joined these sites hoping to find out about their families. Countless messages, such as the one I sent, never receive an answer. I was beyond thrilled when almost immediately I received this response. Hi, Lenny. I'm on my phone, so can't type much. We'll send you a more detailed message tonight. I'm excited to find such a close relative on here. Yes, you very well may be a first cousin, more than likely on my father's side. He was adopted at birth as well. Much more to say, but we'll have to wait until tonight. Looking forward to sharing info and trying to track down our roots. Cousin Tanya. Oh, you can just imagine my excitement. Luckily, I didn't have to wait until that night. A couple of hours later, Tanya sent me a friend request on Facebook, which I immediately accepted. She then proceeded to explain, well, what remains a convoluted story. For brevity here this morning, I'll just cut to the chase. I am one of 12 children born to a woman named Jean Woodward. Of those 12, she gave up 10 for adoption. Beginning in the 90s, some of these adoptees had begun to find each other. In an instant, I had gone from being an only child to suddenly having 6 half-brothers and sisters, and all of them were on Facebook. That was 2 years ago. And I'm still processing exactly what that means. I was lucky. My quest for belonging was successful. And you may ask, Lenny, what changed for you in that moment of revelation? My only answer is everything and nothing at all. I remain the same person I was before learning this truth. And yet a huge hole inside of me was beginning to close. Again, still processing. The second moment of clarity for me in terms of my belonging narrative that I wish to share with you this morning came in 2007, and it happened right across the foyer in the church office. I had been coming to Foothills for about 8 years, but had never joined the church. Frankly, the idea of joining any church kind of made my skin crawl. I mean, religious people? Come on, I'm less than 4% Neanderthal. I'm evolved. What do I need with all this religious nonsense? It was a pleasant early autumn Sunday morning, and I was sitting out on the patio, drinking coffee and conversing with friends. Stan Kidder was a church leader in those days, and on that morning he was frantically seeking people out during social hour. You see, as a member congregation, Foothills pays an assessment upstream to the UUA. Now, when you're a small church, you pay on a per capita basis for each member on your books. But when you reach a certain number of members, that assessment changes to a percentage of your operating budget. And for congregations that are right on that cusp, the savings can be substantial. Well, it seems we must have been within single digits of that plateau. And Stan was looking for obvious members who had never signed the book. Hastily, I was dragged by my shirt collar into the office, handed a pen, and presented with the membership book. I got to tell you, a feeling of terror arose in the pit of my stomach. Am I joining a church? Actually joining a church? That's not me. I'm not one of those people. And then something changed. I thought about those people. All of you, with whom I had sat nearly every Sunday morning for years. I respect you. I love you. I am in relation with you. And suddenly, I felt very ashamed. After all, it was my hang-up that kept me from admitting what had become so obviously clear. I am a Unitarian Universalist. Now, we don't deal in sin too much in this faith. But I realized in that moment that my denial of you and all your splendid human imperfection was a fault in me. And perhaps my denial of you was, in fact, a sin. And so, I signed the book. Joseph Campbell's hero eventually must return to his or her community, permanently altered by their journey. And they always bring with them this new narrative that they have discovered and are anxious to share it with their people. But more often than not, the community is not ready to hear or accept this news. It is too different, too foreign, too uncomfortable to bear. Some heroes will languish for the rest of their lives, labeled a kook by their community, and silently suffer knowing that their cohorts have not yet opened their hearts to the Great Awakening. I have been blessed many times in my life to find success in the theater, to have found the perfect life companion, to unlock the mysteries of my ancestral roots, and to finally have been given this opportunity to unleash the courageous love I have found in this community. I look out on you all here today, and all I see are heroes, all on your own particular journeys. You each face your own trials and tribulations, but know this, you are not alone. The path, while perhaps unfamiliar to you, is well known by others who have gone before. Take a look around you. That person is sitting right next to you. Or maybe they're a couple rows back off to the left. Whatever it is that brought you here today, whatever it is that brings you back week after week, year after year, is part of our collective process of simply being human. It is heroic because it is the grandest accomplishment any of us will ever fulfill. So take my hand. Together, we'll find the way forward through darkness and uncertainty, into lives rich with light and love and meaningful purpose. May it be so. Blessed be and amen.